Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast in association with our friends at Bear Crickets. I'm your host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur, and on my left for today's special episode of the County Cricket Podcast is none other than Derbyshire seam sensation, Sam Connors. So Sam, first things first, mate, thank you very much for joining me here on the podcast today. It's a pleasure to get you on for a chat about all things county cricket. I have to ask, how's your day been so far, mate?
Well, after that introduction, it's got slightly better. Seems sensational. I'll certainly take that. But yeah, had a nice round of golf this morning and excited to be on this podcast now.
Well, Sam, it's our absolute pleasure. It's been a long time coming, hasn't it? We did try to get you on during the season, but again, we understand. Look, the county grind is incredibly, incredibly busy. So, you know, the old proverb, good things come to those who wait. And yes, fingers crossed, this will be a very enjoyable episode of the County Cricket Podcast. So just for the listeners out there, before we get into today's conversation, I'm going to be talking to Sam about his earliest cricketing memories. Then a large focus of today's podcast will, of course, be about Derbyshire County Cricket Club. And then to end today's episode, we have some fan questions and a classic here on TCCP, which is, of course, teammates. But Sam, before we get into all of that good stuff then, I want to take you all the way back to the origin of the Sam Connors cricketing journey. So what were your first ever memories of cricket, either playing or watching this wonderful game?
Going back to my early years, I probably started getting involved in the cricket side of things when I was about 6 or 7. I used to go down to the local park where they had a club, at Sawley Cricket Club, where they did half-term sessions. And I used to go down there 2 or 3 times in the half-term, play a bit of quick cricket, make some new friends, and then kind of just carried on from there, to be honest.
Fair enough. And you mentioned quick cricket. Now, here on the podcast, another variation of the game that myself, Lucy and Joe actually used to play when we were in primary school was diamond cricket. Now, Sam, did you ever have, you know, a cheeky game of diamond cricket, per se, in those early years?
I'm not sure about diamond cricket. I definitely played cricket when I was in primary school. Funny enough, I was the first year three player to play in the year six cricket team when I was in primary school. And then played quick cricket all the way through the primary school. And then in year six, we ended up becoming national champions when we were playing quick cricket. So that's kind of it's a fond memory I look back on in my primary school days, especially.
Yeah, it's a badge of honour that you can carry to this day, really. You know, national. Well, that's incredible, actually. Yeah, I can't say I have a similar experience. I don't think I'd ever be the champion of anything in cricket, to be honest, looking at my bowling
average.
You've still got a lot of time. You say that, Sam. I've been playing for the best part of a decade now. Things don't seem to be changing. So I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. Look, funny things happen in life, but let's just say I'm not exactly counting on it. But in terms of those early years, Sam, who did you look up to in terms of the cricketing world? Did you have any role models, icons, idols in the professional game that you tried to look up to in those early years, per se?
I'd probably say, looking back now, probably Jimmy Anderson is probably the one main one that sticks out at me. And then I think it was the 05 Ashes that really got me going for cricket. And you look at the seamers there, you look at Steve Harmison, Hoggard. They were the kind of bowlers that I really enjoyed watching. And for say, you'd say that they got me really excited to whenever I went down to cricket, and all the times that they played, I'd watch them. But yeah, it was probably them three mainly that got me excited about the game.
It's a common route into the game, and I'm convinced that we need to invest in a 2005 Ashes alarm here on the County Cricket Podcast, because it does seem to crop up every single episode, and I feel like I've said this 1,000 times now, but I'll keep on saying it because it's a fantastic series. The 2005 Ashes really was an iconic test series. It really was. And you can just see the impact that it's had. So many county cricketers, so many cricket fans in this country got into the game because of that series. And Sam, because we have brought it up, I have to ask the age-old question here on the podcast, which is, of course, if you had to go back to 2005, before that Ashes series began, and you could choose one moment in time to relive all over again from that series, what moment would you choose and why?
I'd either have to say the Ponting run out.
Ooh, yeah, the Trent Bridge.
The Flint off over to Ponting. It was either of them two. The Ponting one, just for the the funny side of things about him shining at the changing rooms. And then on the flip side of that, the skill level of Flintoff's bowling and that over really stood out to me as well.
Two excellent moments. They really were. Gary Pratt running out Ricky Ponting.
That's the one, yeah.
At Trent Bridge. And yeah, that was hilarious. Ricky Ponting walking off and giving some verbals to Duncan Fletcher and the England balcony. And that over to Ponting as well from Freddie Flintoff at Edgbaston, which was an extraordinary test as well. We all know the conclusion. Where Kasparovic, did he glove it, Sam? Yes or no?
Yeah, absolutely he did.
Again, absolutely. That's another common theme on the podcast. If you're English, he gloved it. If you're Australian, he didn't touch it. I suppose we'll never know. But again, that result is now history. But what a series, an extraordinary series. And I also have to ask one more question about that series, Sam. Do you have the DVD box set?
Absolutely, I do. As well as the 09 DVD box set as well. I think whenever because we used to go on holiday quite a lot to France and we used to drive it and we had a DVD player that we'd just watch in the back. And I think majority of the time it would just be the 05 Ashes series on. Me and my brother would love it, whereas my sister would have no interest in it whatsoever.
I'm a little bit envious of that, to be honest. The long car journeys up to Scotland or up to the north of England from here in the Midlands. I didn't have the opportunity. I should have invested in one. That would have been absolutely class watching that 2005 Ashes box set. And it seems to be a staple part of every single county cricketer of that generation. So yeah, if you have got it lying about, do let me know. I'd like to get my hands on one, to be honest. But 2009 you mentioned as well. And 2009, I don't think it had the same impact. I hate saying that because that was my first ever series watching England. But if you had to choose a moment from that series, what would you choose and why, Sam?
Like you said, I don't think it had that much more impact on me than the 05, even though I was a bit older and probably watched it more than I probably did the 05. I think the 05 one still stands out to me a lot more than the 09 one does. But I think in the 09 one, I think it was probably, was it the Flintoff run out of Ponting this time? Was that in the 09 one? I think that always stands out to me. Again, the skill level of Flintoff being able to keep his concentration throughout the day and then be able to produce that bit of magic to run him out. I think that always stands out to me as well.
Good choice. And again, a common theme here, being Freddie Flintoff, an outstanding cricketer. He really was. And in that series, aside from Freddie, I have to say the one moment that I'll never forget, because this was the first game. I wasn't at the ground. I wasn't at Sapphire Gardens for this game, but it was the first England game that I watched, at least. And it was that final hour. It was that final hour, the great escape in Cardiff,
yeah,
with Jimmy Anderson and Monty Panesar. Some of the most hilarious, if you're English, some of the most hilarious batting you're ever going to see in your life. The amount of times they almost gloved it and edged it, I don't think you could even count, but they dug in there like absolute warriors. And to be honest, I think that game and the way in which it ebbed and flowed and the way in which England just dug in there and fought tooth and nail for a result, I think that's probably why I got into Test cricket. So I have Jimmy Anderson and Monty Panesar to thank for that, to be completely honest. And Peter Siddle maybe slightly as well for not getting them out. But yeah.
I think being a fellow tail-ender, I think you appreciate that partnership at the end even more so. Just the grit and determination that them two showed was really something to watch.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And yeah, I couldn't agree more, to be honest. Yeah, we're not bowling all-rounders. We're tail-enders. All right. That's what we go by. But in terms of your bowling now, we've spoken there a little bit about batting and the tail end of role, again, one that I'm very accustomed to. But in terms of your journey as a seam bowler, we haven't touched upon this just yet, Sam. So why did you become a seam bowler in the first place? What was it about the art form that drew you in and made you become a seam bowler in the very first place?
I think always from a young age, I had the natural ability to be a seam bowler. I think it was always trying to compete with my brother, trying to see who can bowl quicker. And but then when I started to get a bit older, probably about 12, 13, and learned the art of swing bowling, not to the same degree I do now, but just being able to watch Jimmy Anderson go about his work and have the control that he had in the swing that he produced, I think that also drew me into becoming a seam bowler as well. And I think that was the main reason I became seam bowler, was just so I could have fun with it, pretty much. Have fun swinging the ball, slow balls and all that type of stuff. And that kind of just drew me into seam bowling even more.
I always liken seam bowling. I'm glad you mentioned that, actually. I always mention it as the rock and roll star of bowling in cricket, because you have these electrifying moments. I think back to 2019 and that over from Jofra Archer to Steve Smith. I think to the early 2000s as well, when we had those speed demons, the likes of Sean Tate, the Wild Thing, Sherb Akhtar, Brett Lee, to name but a few. It is the one which really kind of captures the imagination, I think, of cricket fans. And then spin, I say this as a spinner who used to bowl seam as well, so I do have a healthy respect for seam bowling. Unfortunately, I had a bad couple of games as a seamer, so I decided to become a spin bowler. But as a spinner, I think it's more methodical. I think it's a slower art form. It takes a lot more time to master. But once you do, you look at the likes of Muralitharan, Shane Warne, Rangana Harath, Graham Swan. Yeah, you never lose the love for spin bowling either. And Sam, I'm glad you mentioned swing bowling in particular, because it is a part of the art form which, again, draws in the attention of the cricket fan. It's something which can't quite be explained. We don't know it, you know, the science, the exact science behind swing bowling. But again, it's something which draws you in as a fan. So I have to ask, what is your favourite aspect of seam bowling? Is it the ability to get that ball swinging and nipping about all over the place? Is it the ability to intimidate batsmen? Is it the ability to knock over off stumps and send them cartwheeling? What is it about seam bowling which you would say is your favourite aspect of the art form?
I'd say it's a mix of swing bowling especially, and then also how much I enjoy seeing the off stump cartwheeling back on the occasional when I get lucky sometimes. Obviously, seeing the off stump go back is a very nice feeling. But going back to swing bowling, I think that's the one thing that's always stands out to me and the one thing I enjoy to do. So I'd probably say swing bowling is the main one.
There's something magical about it, isn't there? We've alluded to Jimmy Anderson already. I think back in the 90s as well, I can't say I watched him live, but Wazim Akram and Waqar Yunus, those two reversing it all over the place, that'd be an absolute nightmare to face. It really would.
That's a proper skill to be able to reverse swing the ball like them two do, especially.
Mm-hmm. Well, they are absolute legends when it comes to reverse swing. Zahir Khan as well. Have to give a mention to Zahir Khan from India. Another one, an absolute master with the left arm angle. Again, it's a wonderful, wonderful piece of the art form. And yeah, it's weird that we don't still, you know, quite understand swing bowling. We think it's to do with overcast conditions. The humidity might play a factor. We always shine the ball as well, don't we? To get it swinging. But it is funny how after all of these years, we still don't know the exact science behind it. So who knows? Maybe one day we'll find out and everyone will be zipping the ball about all over the place like Jimmy Anderson. But yeah, it is interesting. I've always found that a very, very interesting variable when it comes to our wonderful game. And talking of our wonderful game, Sam, I think that brings us nicely onto the world of county cricket. So before we talk about Derbyshire County Cricket Club and your experiences with the East Midlands County so far, I just want to take you back a little bit earlier to your first memories of the county game. So what were your, you know, your earliest memories of county cricket? Maybe watching, maybe playing in academy pathways. What were your first ever memories of county cricket here in England and Wales?
I'd say that probably my first like really knowing about county cricket probably came on the game Cricket 05, quite a while ago now. That's when I really first like knew about county cricket. And when I was growing up, I'd never really, not that I remember, really watched much county cricket. It was normally all the international stuff that I got involved in, only until probably about 16, 17. When you're playing a bit of second team cricket, a bit of academy stuff, that you start taking a bit of an interest in the county cricket circuit. And I've probably always seemed to favour Derbyshire as my team, and it always will be. But yeah, not really a lot of watching of the county cricket until I was probably 16, 17.
That's interesting that. We don't usually have that on the podcast. I mean, we do with overseas guests, obviously, because they watch their respective domestic tournaments, but yeah, that is very, very late to county cricket. And I suppose we have to talk about Derbyshire, because as you said there, they are the club which has got your heart now. You've been playing for them for the past couple of seasons, and I have to ask, in the first place, how did you become a Derbyshire player? What were the steps on that journey for Sam Connors becoming a member of Derbyshire County Cricket Club's playing 11?
It started when I was actually under nines. So I got picked up when I was under nines, playing a year above within the 10 side. And then it kind of just progressively went year by year, went under 10, under 11s, went all the way through the age groups. And then thankfully in under 14s, I believe, I got put onto the mini academy. So the kind of just the step above of the age group stuff where you get a bit of extra coaching and things like that. And then I was on the mini academy for 2 years, so under 14s, under 16s. And then the normal progression is you go straight onto the academy. But for me, it was, I got left out of the academy when I was under 17s, and which meant I had a year of just playing under 17 cricket at Derbyshire's and then playing club cricket on the side of that. Every now and again, they'd rope me in for the academy games where they might be short or they won't have a look at me for the next year. And thankfully, at the end of the under 17 year, I'd played a couple of second team games and done okay. And I always had Kevin Dean in my corner, always nudging the academy managers, coaches to get me in the academy. And I'm always thankful for that. So then eventually under 18, they got put onto the academy and then was on the academy from under 18s and 19s, as well as playing for England the 19s when I was under 19 as well. And then signed my first professional deal at the start of the 2019 year. So it was quite a long process, but thankful for the little fallbacks that I had during that time, which have obviously made me have a bit more character about me to this day now.
Absolutely, yeah. And I don't want to sound too cliche here on the podcast, but everything in life does happen for a reason. And again, you do sometimes have to have those grounding moments, those ones where the game does act as a leveler, because it makes you a better cricketer in the long run. And again, without those setbacks, those difficulties, I suppose, on that journey, who knows? Who knows if you would have become the Sam Connors that we're seeing in county cricket today? But before we talk about Derbyshire and your debut, you did allude to it there, Sam, about England under-19s. Just for the listeners out there, could you just give us a little bit of insight into your experiences with the England under-19s and maybe just, you know, tell us some of the names that you played with while playing with them?
So my experience with England under-19s was excellent. I was quite lucky and fortunate that I actually got on the tour to start with, as I wasn't anywhere near probably playing for England under-19s at the stage I got put into the side. I was playing second team cricket, Derbyshire at the time, and my academy coach, Mal Loy, gave me a phone call and said, look, we're a couple bowlers short at this trial game against the South Africa under-19s. And he said, look, get yourself down here first thing tomorrow and you'll be able to bowl in front of the coach, John Lewis, at the time. So I turned up on that morning, just went about my business, just didn't really think too much of it. I just personally thought I was just there just to make the numbers up, just have a bowl at the South Africans. And then after that day's play, I bowled okay. And Mal came over to me and just said, look, mate, you've made it into the squad. And I was blown away, pretty much. Did not expect it whatsoever. And then going on to the tour, it was a month tour. First 3 weeks were test match cricket, well, 4 day cricket in under 19s terms. And it was a fantastic month away, I'd say. Some of the names I'll draw back here was Tom Banton was the captain. So obviously he's gone on to do so many great things in the game already. And you could tell he was already destined to be a top player even in the under 19 stages. And then you've got the players like Ben Charlesworth and Jack Haynes as well, who also are doing fantastic work at the county ground as well. And so they're just a couple of the players, and I probably took away a lot from that experience just there. And it made me realise that was the job I wanted to do, as I wasn't really anywhere. I was, before that series, I probably wasn't in line to get a contract, but fortunately enough, after that 19 series, I think they kind of showed that I had that inner belief and the talent almost to get that contract.
Well, Sam, that is lovely to hear. It really, really is. So I'm glad that you had such a positive time with the England under-19 team, because we get that quite a lot here on the podcast. In fact, I think Ben, big up to Ben as well. Ben is a former guest here on the podcast, Ben Charlesworth from Gloucestershire County Cricket Club. He also detailed about how much he enjoyed his experiences with the under-19 team, because it is a good route into the game, isn't it? It's not the exact same. Okay, it's not the exact same intensity, the exact same level, because you're all of the same, you know, similar ages. You're not going to get the Darren Stevens of the world coming in and tearing through your batting lineup. But it's a good way, again, to almost ease into the professional game. So big up to Ben Charlesworth, big up to the England under-19s as well. And Sam, I'm very, very happy that you had such an excellent time with them. And yeah, long may it continue. We've got some excellent players in the under 19 team right now, with the likes of Jacob Bethel in there. Big up to Warwickshire for getting him on the right path. And yeah, I think a little bit. We get that a lot here in the podcast, Sam. Usually when I'm on my own, when Joe and Lucy are here, there's a little bit more, you know, evenness with the coverage. Yeah. But when I've got free range, hey, it's coming out one way or another.
Fair play to you.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, it's our podcast. We're allowed a little bit of Warwickshire bias now and again. But we are here to talk about Warwickshire, are we, Sam? Because the main focus of today's podcast is Derbyshire County Cricket Club, who in the last 24 hours have also announced the big news that Mickey Arthur and his questionably short shorts have made their way to the Ancora Ground in Derby, which we'll talk about later as well. That was one of the fan questions. But before we talk about that, we have to talk about your debut, Sam. Your first ever game for Derbyshire County Cricket Club. I have to ask, how momentous, how prestigious of a moment was that for you personally, after going through academy cricket, England under 19 cricket, second 11 cricket? How vindicating of a moment was that for you to step out on that field as a first 11 player for Derbyshire County Cricket Club?
Well, it's always going to be a special memory for me. Probably the highlight of my career to date, I'd say. Going through the age groups and wanting to play for Derbyshire ever since a young age and being able to fulfil that is always going to be special to me. I think it was the most nervous I've ever been stepping onto that pitch, going to play that first match. But the lads I had around me were fantastic. I think Tony Palladino wasn't actually playing the game, but he was there and he just said to me a couple of words, just of, it's just like a normal game, which kind of stuck with me, and it helped me get through that first game. And when you eventually bowl that first ball and you get it down there, I think my first ball was a massive no ball because I was that nervous and messed up my running stride. But when you get that first ball down there, you kind of just have the butterflies go and you kind of just ease into your role almost.
Well, you do. And again, that is a common occurrence here on the podcast because it's a massive thing, isn't it? You're playing for one of the 18 first-class counties here in England and Wales. You're living a dream which thousands of people will never actually achieve. So it's always a massive occasion, and one which, again, you don't need me to say this, but I imagine you're incredibly proud of, as any county cricketer should be, because it's an immense occasion for any cricketer in this country to represent one of those counties. And Sam, this might be a difficult question, actually, because in retrospect, from 2019 to 2021, would you say that was your highlights from your time with Derbyshire so far, from an individual perspective? Would you say making your debut, that is your career highlight so far? Or would you say there's been another moment from your time with the Falcons so far which has topped that in the years that have followed?
I think it is a tricky question. I think it's a special moment and one I'm very fond of in terms of my whole career, to a personal level, but then also taking 5 wickets in county cricket is also almost that kind of a pinnacle where a young bowler wants to get to, and being able to do that was also a very special moment. So I think them two at the moment are a bit on level par. But maybe when I get a bit older and start to realise what I've done in the game, hopefully anyway, that debut will always be a special one for me.
Oh yeah, it will, without a shadow of a doubt. You never forget your debut. It's always an immensely, immensely proud moment for any cricketer. And you mentioned that fifer against Durham up at the Riverside in April. I have to ask, when you took that fifth wicket, what was going through your head? What are the feelings? What are the emotions going through your head at that time?
Thank goodness for getting off this pitch, I think was the was the first one, because I remember it was a baking first 2 days at the Riverside, and it was quite a flat pitch as well. So to take the final wicket and the fifth wicket was a feeling of delight. But joking aside, I think it was, I wouldn't say a relief, but it kind of showed that I can do it at this level. I think that's key for me, like realising like, oh yeah, I can do it now. It kind of gave me the inner belief to carry on going throughout the season, and realising that this is the place to be, and it kind of gave me something to build in as well.
If you don't mind me asking, Sam, could we actually expand upon that, if you don't mind me asking, because that again is a common theme here on the podcast with younger cricketers. It's that feeling that they weren't good enough. In fact, this came up when I had a chat with Charles Dagnall as well. in one of our recent episodes when he was a younger cricketer. He was always battling that feeling that, am I good enough to be a county cricketer? So, Sam, I have to ask, why did you feel like that, considering that you've gone through academy cricket, you've done second 11, you've done England under-19s? Why was there that feeling, that apprehension, I suppose, behind you not feeling as though you were almost worthy of county cricket when you've done all of those good things beforehand?
So another good question. I think it wasn't about probably feeling worthy about it. I think it was more just proving to myself that I was good enough. And that comes from almost not having a big impact on a game in recent times, in the county cricket circuit especially. I played two games in 2019 where I didn't really do much. I probably bowled 10 overs in each game. And then 2020 was kind of almost a breakthrough year, but I didn't really have that impact that I felt like I needed to have. But then when you take the first five wickets, you feel like you've had a good impact on that game, and it's a big contribution to the team. And that's probably one of the reasons why you kind of sometimes doubt yourself if you're not there yet. But when you take that five, you almost feel, oh, you've made a good contribution to that game. And then the relief almost just takes over a little bit as well.
Fair enough. I think you've articulated that very, very well, Sam. As I said, I was just intrigued by that, because I haven't really asked that before on the podcast. Apologies if I did put you on the spot with that. But it is interesting, because I've always thought that when it comes to young cricketers, why is there this doubt, that lack of self-belief almost in those early years? So I just wanted to get a little bit more insight. So thank you for that, Sam. I really do appreciate that. And let's just talk a little bit about 2020 as well, before we talk about 2021, your performances, because there was one game in particular, Sam. And I think you know exactly which one I'm talking about. It was the East Midlands Derby. We have had Finn Hudson-Prentice on the podcast to discuss this at length. In fact, I had him on my old podcast in 2020 as well. So myself and Finn have spoken about that game on multiple occasions. And I imagine that he talked about that in the dressing room and at any moment that he gets as well. Yep, Sam nodding his head. I thought he might. But in terms of that game, for those who don't know, a 3-wicket victory for Derbyshire in the 2020 Bob Willis Trophy, Finn Hudson-Prentice scoring 91 out as well. And that iconic photo of him jumping up in the air, glove punching as well. It was a fascinating game. In my opinion, it was the game of the year in 2020. I have to ask, Sam, what can you remember from that game? Because you played a very pivotal role as well in the first innings.
Yeah, you say pivotal role. I think Duppy should take probably a bit more credit for that. I was just trying to stick around for as long as possible and not get out, to be honest. But yeah, I remember it quite very well. It was just an unbelievable game. It was just so many turns in that game where it could have easily swayed towards Notts game, and then it came back towards and then back to there. And it was just one of them games where Finn just played an unbelievable knock. I think he'll even say so himself how much of a good knock it was. And I think we'll all be grateful for what a knock it was as well. But yeah, a special game, and probably remember it more fondly from a 5 not out. I think it was a 55 balls.
It was. What a strike rate that is. Core. What is that as a strike rate? 9?
Yeah, it really wasn't a lot. I remember our photographer Griff, he put out a stat. It was like the percentages of what Duppy scored to what I scored in our partnership. And I have no idea how many Duppy scored, but it was a lot more than what I scored, especially.
I believe he scored 70-odd. I think that's what Deploy scored. Lais Deploy, for those who don't know who Duppy is, who we're actually referring to.
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that. Was that in our partnership, he scored 70?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, because I remember, yeah, he definitely helped him get to his 100. Yeah. I was there guiding him along, I'd say.
Typical tailenders response there. One which I think we can all agree with in the tailenders union. But yeah, you say that. I know, obviously, Lais Deploy did the heavy lifting, I suppose, in that partnership. But you have to have a partner. I think back to the 18-19 Australia series, Australia-South Africa. Was it 18-19 or... No, 17-18, sorry, this was. And Temba Bavuma was on 95 not out. He had played magnificently well against the likes of Mitchell Starc, Pat Cummins. and he was digging in and digging in. And then Mornay Morkel played a little bit of a loose shot, got out, and left Temba Bavuma on 95. So you say that it's not a massive role. Obviously, the run scoring is important as well. But as a tail ender, you have to dig in. You have to dig in. So fair play to you, Sam. Good on you for, you know, battling away, showing the grit, the fortitude, the resilience, which makes us up in the tail enders union. I think you should be immensely proud of that knock, Percy speaking. And talking of 2021 then, from 2020, which was a remarkable season, COVID cricket, no fans. I mean, to be fair, Derbyshire did have a decent year in 2020, almost made it through in the North Group, second place behind only Yorkshire County Cricket Club. But 2021, I think it was safe to say that from a club's perspective, it didn't quite go to plan. Second bottom in Division 3, struggling to get starch, had a lot of injuries as well. I must admit, loads of injuries. Godelman was out absent. You had Harvey Hussain out injured as well. Alex Hughes was injured. Madsen was injured. It was like every single week, Dustin Melton as well, a former guest here on the podcast, every single week it was like someone new is going on that injury list. So Sam, I have to ask, what were your experiences, I suppose, in the 2021 season? How would you go about describing that season in your own words from both an individual and a club perspective?
As an individual, I'd say it'll obviously stand myself in good stead for the future. Having that type of year where really nothing went to plan almost, you'd be able to draw back on that experience if you're ever going through another tough time. But on the flip side of that, you look at how many games I played and what I was able to achieve in terms of trying to play as much as I can, especially in the red ball. Fortunately, didn't play any of the white ball. But in terms of red ball stuff, it's great experience to be able to just go out there and play. And I think especially Billy Godelman, our captain, he's brilliant with the younger guys, and he lets us just go out there and play as freely as we will almost. And I think him being like that always has a positive impact on those younger guys, because we don't really feel the pressure of probably a lot of the other guys probably maybe feel. And I think that's key for any young guy coming into the county game, is being able to just play as freely as they want. But as a team perspective, I think, yeah, it wasn't a great year at all, to be honest. It was, at times it was tough. Week in, week out, getting beaten quite heavily as well. It does have its toll on the lads. But we kind of want to forget about that season. With Mickey Arthur coming in now, we want to have a real good shot at next year and leave last year behind us.
Absolutely. But before we talk about Mickey Arthur, I do just want to actually say this for the Derbyshire fans tuning in as well to today's podcast. Sometimes you do need a season like that. And I think back to 2019, a season where I was going up and down the country watching Warwickshire. And let's just say, again, talking of injuries, there was a new injury every single week. I think at one point we were missing 7 or 8 seam bowlers. We had the likes of James Wainman, Ben Mike came in on loan, Fidel Edwards came in on loan, Toby Lester came in on loan. We promoted the likes of George Garrett and Ethan Brooks up through the academy. We had so many absentees and we didn't have a good season. We almost got relegated. Without Dom Sibley scoring 1,244 runs, we would have been relegated. We didn't do well in the T20 Blast. In the first 3 games, we were top and we finished it second bottom. So again, it was just one of those seasons for the Bear and Ragged staff. We didn't get through in the One Day Cup either. Sometimes you look back on those seasons almost as a blessing in disguise, because I'm not saying in 2 seasons' time Derbyshire are going to replicate what Warwickshire have, because a lot needs to fall into place before that can happen. But all I'm saying is that sometimes you look at seasons like this, the players such as yourself, Sam, learn from them. They take lessons which last for the rest of your career as well. You need these seasons sometimes to remind you of where we need to be at. So for Derbyshire fans out there, I do have a soft spot for Derbyshire as well, if I've not made that already clear enough on multiple episodes of the podcast. I think you're a wonderful club with a very community aspect behind the club itself. I absolutely love going to the Ancora ground, but just have faith in the club. Keep watching games, keep going to games, and hopefully, fingers crossed, obviously I don't want it at the expense of my beloved Bears, but if the Bears are in a position where we can't win a trophy and Derbyshire can, we'll have a little bit of a soft spot for the East Midlands County. Let's just say that, to say the least. But that's all speculation. We'll have to wait and see whether or not that does happen. And of course, there's a man at the centre of this, Sam, which you've just alluded to. He was in our fan questions as well. And that is a certain Mickey Arthur, someone who I am incredibly, incredibly happy to see in county cricket, say the least. He's a fantastic character. He's very good as well at developing young talent. We've seen that with this current Sri Lanka crop. Winindu Hasaranga put up a really emotional statement yesterday, actually, on his Twitter as well, saying about how much Mickey Arthur had changed his career path. I have to ask, Sam, before we get into those fan questions surrounding Mickey Arthur, when did you find out about the appointment?
Not that long ago, actually. I think it was maybe the day before.
Seriously?
The day before. Obviously, you read a lot online about the speculation and all the rumours and stuff like that. And there's only so much to a degree that you can actually like trust, to be fair. Until it actually got set in stone that we were getting Mickey was probably the day before it got announced. Obviously, there was a buzz around the club, having his pedigree, what he's done in the game. It's going to be an absolute blessing to have him around and be able to lock into his experience, his style of play. It's all such a benefit for Derbyshire, and it's going to be an exciting time for us, I believe.
Absolutely it is. I must admit, my first kind of initial reaction to the news was, my goodness, that's a statement of intent, because 2021 didn't go Derbyshire's way. But if you are to have anyone who was available right now in the game to come in, steady the ship and put Derbyshire on the right path, as he did with Pakistan, as he did with South Africa, as he's just done with Sri Lanka, you just would select Mickey Arthur. I think it's a fantastic appointment from the club. I really do. And as I said, I can't wait to see him in county cricket next year. Do you think he's going to bring in the iconic shorts, Sam? Or is he going to go for some lengthier
maybe
attire?
Maybe not for the first couple of weeks. I think you need to get used to the Derbyshire climate before the shorts start coming out. But you never know. They could be out straight away. And I think all the lads would be keen to see it, to be fair.
As would we as the fans. Mickey Arthur, on the 0.00001% chance you are tuning in to today's podcast, please, please wear the shorts. We're begging in county cricket. We really are. And as I said, Derbyshire County Cricket Club, I'm just saying, if you're looking for some merchandise, the Mickey Arthur shorts collection, I think would be quite a good ploy from a marketing perspective as well, as soon as Mickey does join the club. And this brings us nicely, actually, onto our fan questions. I alluded to them right at the start of the podcast in Nice Sam. And our first fan question of the day is from Ash. Now, Ash, first of all, thank you very much for sending in these questions. He's got multiple for you, Sam. And his first one is surrounding Mickey Arthur. Have the players had a chance to talk to him yet, Sam? Have you had the chance to interact with Mickey Arthur yet? Or is that going to come at a later date, per se?
We've had one interaction with him, just him introducing himself and just a couple of bits like that. But I think he'll want to do all his talking face-to-face to really have an impact on us. And I think we're all buzzing for him to get over here so we can actually meet him and get to work with him.
Good answer. Ash, I hope that has sufficiently answered your question. I certainly think it has. That'll be interesting, won't it? What do you think your first reaction is going to be like when you meet Mickey Arthur?
There could be a bit of shell shock in there. I think just try and get over to him as quick as possible, shake his hand and just introduce myself. Hopefully he knows a little bit about me, but if not, I wouldn't be surprised.
He will. He definitely will, Sam. He'll do his research. He'll know every single one of you. He'll know everything about your club sides, stats, data. It's Mickey Arthur. He's a very, very thorough man when it comes to the wonderful game of cricket. And talking of the game itself, this is also from Ash again. This is the second of his questions, Sam. What's your favourite format of the game between first class, list A, T20 cricket? What is your favourite format of cricket?
I'd have to say first class cricket. Good just answer. Because I much prefer bowling with a red ball rather than a white one. I think that's the main reason for it, and also just the longevity of it and everything that comes with it as well, which all helps as well.
100%. I must admit, I'm not surprised by the answer as someone who loves to swing the ball, because in white ball, it does die very quickly, doesn't it? It really does, yeah. It's a batsman's game, is T20, to say the least. But yeah, first-class cricket, it's my favourite form as well, because I just love almost the uniqueness surrounding it. It's the fact that you get to see the individuality of players, the likes of Burns and Sibley, with their batting technique. I mean, if you think back to old tests as well, Paul Adams, the frog in a blender, the left-arm wrist spinner, with his unique bowling action, Murali as well. Like, you get to see a narrative unfold over those 4 days, and it's brilliant. It's absolute theatre. I think first-class cricket, to be completely honest, is the best sport on the planet. I'm just going to put it out there. I love List A. I love T20 as well. Trust me, I will go to those games at any level, grassroots up to international. I'm there. If you invite me to some cricket, I'm watching it. But first-class cricket and the old adage, test is best, it just is. It's a fantastic, fantastic format.
I'd say so as well.
Exactly, Sam. Exactly. Could not agree more. And what a fantastic cliche phrase that is. Moving on to our next question then from Ash. Yet another one from Ash. And this next one actually relates to T20 cricket, which we've just alluded to slightly there. Sam, are you looking to get into T20 cricket at all heading into 2022? Or is your focus primarily on red ball cricket?
Oh, I'm definitely hoping to try and get into the T20 side. I think I've said it for the last 3 or 4 years. I'm really wanting to develop every aspect of my game. Unfortunately, being hit with a few injuries along the way, which has meant that I haven't been able to play much white ball cricket. But this winter is going to be a big one for me in terms of nailing down my white ball skills. And then hopefully I might have a good run at it next year. And that's the main aim, is to play all three formats next year.
Very, very promising then for the Derbyshire fans out there. And Sam, I have to ask actually, just to follow up on that, in terms of your role in T20 cricket, what do you see yourself as? A death over specialist, a middle overs enforcer, a power play strike bowler? What are you, I don't know, trying to achieve in terms of the niche in this Falcon side?
I think I'd like to see myself as someone that could take the new ball. Hopefully get a bit of swing with a new ball maybe, and a bit of seam movement, and try to be that early wicket taker. And then on the flip side, that I'd also try, like to think that I could do a job at the death. Mix it up with a couple of slow balls and Yorkers and all the skills that come with it. But there's a lot of work in progress at the minute. So hopefully by next year, I'll be nailing them skills.
Fingers crossed, Sam. Fingers crossed. And we'll get to see you in the T20 Blast, because T20 Blast nights, as we all know, for anyone who's been to T20 Blast night under the lights, no matter where you are in the country, they are special. They really are. Sweet Caroline echoing around the ground. You've got, they are brilliant. I miss them already.
I'm yet to play a T20 in front of any fans. So I think it'll be a great time for me next year to play my first one.
I have to ask that, Sam, actually. This brings me nicely onto a question that I forgot to ask from today's podcast. But aside from the Inchora ground, because that is your home ground, it's obvious you're going to say that. But what do you say is your favourite ground outside of Derby? And don't say Chesterfield.
As much as Chesterfield is very nice, I'd have to probably sway to either Lords or... I enjoy Yorkshire with the new stand they're putting at Yorkshire. I think it's very nice. It kind of gives you that closed in feeling where all the fans around you, and they feel like they're very close on you. But them two especially are probably my two favourite grounds.
Also two grounds where there is a little bit more of a seam conducive nature as well. So, hey.
Correct. Yeah. Anything helps.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It certainly does when it comes to the game of cricket. Anything that helps the bowlers, hey, we're all for here on the Counter Cricket Podcast, as long as it's within the laws of the game. No ball tampering, please.
Correct.
Exactly. But moving on to our next question. This is from OB Josh 88. This is a good question, and I would love to know your thoughts on this, Sam. Who would be your dream overseas player to play with at Derbyshire County Cricket Club?
It is a good question. If only I could pick for next year the overseas. I'd like to someone that has a bit of pace to him, which I'd love to be able to watch at, say, mid-off or mid-on. So I'd probably sway towards maybe a Pat Cummins. I'd say probably Pat Cummins, just his engine he's got, the skills he's got, and he can also give it a good whack at the end.
Yeah, good answer that. Pat Cummins, outstanding player. Really, really is. I'd love to see him in county cricket, as would many people. Hopefully, you know, from an Ashes perspective, has a little bit of a quiet winter by his standards. But who knows, we could see him in 2022 in county cricket tearing up the circuit. I think that'd be absolutely fantastic for the game. Someone who I would like to see at Derbyshire, especially now you've got the Mickey Arthur connection, Winindu Hasaranga da Silva. Bring him in. I don't care who signs him. Look, even if he plays against Warwickshire, I love Winindu Hasaranga. I want to see him in county cricket. I've been talking about this guy since 2019. For people who know me outside of the county cricket podcast, I just love the way in which he plays the game. And the fact is, I think there was one game in the T20 World Cup. I can't remember exactly which one it was. It was one of the group stage matches. And Winindu Hasaranga, after taking two or three wickets, said to Harsha Bogle, he's a batting all-rounder. A batting all-rounder. Imagine if he spent even more time on his bowling. He's got one of the most lethal wrong-uns in cricket right now. So hashtag we want Winindu. You saw it on our Twitter. We're going to say it again. We want Winindu Hasaranga in county cricket in 2022. Counties, if you're listening, we want to see him. We want to see Winindu in county cricket. But moving on to our next question then. This is from Thomas Hill. This is quite a funny one. Again, relates to a former guest here on the County Cricket podcast. Sam, how crucial will Super Georgie Scrimshaw be to your hopes of success next year?
Oh, well, you saw how well he did last year in the T20 Blast. And I think with another winter under his belt, keeping himself fit, I think he's going to be raring to go again next year. And he'll be very crucial. He does that enforced role in the middle overs so well. His extra height at 6'6", 6'7", however tall he is, and the pace that he has, it really is a great asset to have at the club. And hopefully he does as well as he did last year, if not better. And hopefully see him getting 100 ball as well.
He was absolutely brilliant in last year's Blast, and funnily enough, we had him on the podcast. I think this was after just two games of the season. He'd had a relatively quiet start. I think he was actually going at nines with regards to his economy rate. I think he took one wicket. We had him on the podcast, and he started literally as soon as we released the episode, all of a sudden, it was taking like two wickets a game at sixes. And I was like, what on earth has happened here, George? Because he is a great bowler. Let me just say this. Again, he's played for England under-19s. He's been brilliant in the past for Worcestershire. As long as he stays fit, he's a serious bowler. He really is. What is he, 6'7" as well? So he has a lot of extra pace.
About 6'7", yeah.
I know. George, if you're listening, we need to meet in person because I'm 6'3", so he would make me feel small, to say the least. But yeah, I do like George. He's a great bloke, was wonderful on the podcast, and fingers crossed he can stay fully fit next year, because if he does, yourself, George, Mikey Cohen as well, Anerjee in there as well. You've got some very, very good seamers at the Ancora ground. So that would be interesting as long as you guys can stay fit. I can't believe this. Someone who we mentioned earlier on the podcast, a certain all-rounder who has recently left Derbyshire, as we are recording the podcast, has just replied to our tweet. So thank you, Mr. Finn Hudson-Prentice, for this question. I was expecting a serious one. Instead, it isn't. It's related to golf, Sam. But this question, oh my goodness, this question from Finn. When is he going to get an actual golf handicap and not just make up one on the day of his rounds?
Well, it's a very good question, and it's one that's in the works, I believe. I think he's still a bit bitter after this morning, after I took him down 2-1. But yeah, I think maybe give me another month or two, and I might actually have a handicap for him, and then we can go play again, Finn, and I'd probably still win, mate.
Fighting talk here on the County Cricket podcast. I cannot believe that has literally just come up on my Twitter feed. I've just got the notification on it. I thought that had been it for today's fan questions. But yeah, Finn, fair play. Got it in just in time. Very, very lucky, to say the least. But Sam, that is pretty much it from our fan questions. Before we do end today's podcast, though, we do just have five quick TCCP teammate questions as well. So you may be able to get your own back on a certain Mr. Ben Aitchison after his appearance a couple of weeks ago. So just for the listeners out there, basically, I've got these five questions in front of me. All of them relate to the teammates that Sam Connors shares a dressing room with at the Cora Ground in Derby. So, Sam, are you ready for TCCP teammates?
I'm ready, mate.
Fantastic. The first one, a classic here on the County Cricket Podcast. Who is the teacher's pet at Derbyshire County Cricket Club? Who's always hanging around the coaches, per se?
I'm going to say Brooke Guest, only because he's already been in hitting balls this week.
Has he?
Yeah, so he's going to get my vote for it.
Now, fair enough, an apt choice. I think Brooke Guest has come up quite a few times as well, if I'm not mistaken. Look, Brooke, there's nothing wrong with it. There's nothing wrong with being the
Absolutely
teacher's
not.
Pet. Exactly, but it does seem to crop up quite a few times when we have the Derbyshire lads. So obviously a very, very obvious choice when it comes to that dressing room. Moving on to the next one, Sam. Who is the dressing room DJ at the Ancora, and what are their choices of tunes?
Dressing room DJ. You know what? I think I'm going to give it myself, the dressing room DJ, only because at the start of last year, we had a speaker in the change rooms, and I'd normally put my tunes on. I'd be quite early and I'd connect to the speaker straight away. And I'd pretty much just blast on anything. Bit of dance, bit of old school music, anything really that lads fancied. Obviously, we'd take music requests as well if required. So yeah, I'm going to take that on myself.
Fair enough, Sam. That's what we like to hear as well. Democratic, you know, making allowances for other people's genres and tastes as well. You always want that with the DJ. You don't just want the same genre again and again and again. That's a lesson for any aspiring dressing room DJs out there as well in the village or indeed the county circuit. Sam, moving on to our next one. This is the classic one here at the County Cricket Podcast, and I think you know exactly what's coming. You will have to throw at least one person under the proverbial bus, because I am, of course, alluding to the timeless question here on TCCP. Who are the best and worst dressed at the Ancora Ground?
The best and worst dressed. I think the worst is always an obvious choice. I think Mikey Cohen, he rocks some very questionable outfits at times. But you back him in whatever he's wearing. He's a top boy, and we'll take him in whatever outfit. And then best dressed. I think there's quite a few, like, just almost regular outfits that crack off in our changing room. I think obviously Harry Kane, he wears some decent gears. H sometimes wears some all right gears. And then for an experienced player now, Alex Hughes, he goes under the radar a little bit with his outfits, but I'm always a big fan of what he wears.
Well, that'll put a nice smile on their faces. Mikey Cohen, not so short again. Mikey, apologies, but your name does keep on cropping up on the podcast. If you ever want to come on and defend yourself and show us your garms, okay, let us know at the County Cricket Podcast. We'd love to get you on for a chat, to say the least, Mikey. But yeah, there does seem to be a pattern when it comes to the Derbyshire players with that question. Moving on to our penultimate question, Sam. And I have changed it up slightly because I think this is rather apt, given the question from Finn Hudson-Prentice, given the statement on Twitter as well from Ben Aitchison, which in hindsight I think was aimed at me because I can drive 225 yards, not 250 plus. So thanks for that, Ben. That was very, very kind on Twitter. But with regards to this penultimate question, Sam, who is the best golfer at Derbyshire County Cricket Club? Who fancies themselves as the dressing room Tiger Woods, per se?
I kind of wish you didn't have to ask that question, because for me, there's only one player, and it's H. H is probably the best golfer. I think he plays near enough every day at his local course, and he's played from a young age. So I think Biggin's going to have to take that one. As much as it pains me to say it, he will be the best golfer, I reckon.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. In fact, I think it was straight after the recording, I think he went to play golf. As soon as we finished our podcast, he went and played golf. So yeah, Ben Aitchison, definitely an apt choice there, to say the very least there, Sam. And moving on to our final one. It is November. It's almost that time of the year. And no, I'm not talking about Christmas. I am talking about I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. For those who don't know, again, a classic here on the podcast. So, Sam, I have to ask, if you could choose one member of the Derbyshire County Cricket Club dressing room team to go on I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here in the future, who'd you choose and why?
I think I might go with the skipper, Billy Godelman. Nothing really fears that man. And I think he'd just be able to smash every challenge that gets put in front of him if he did have to go on. So, yeah, I'm going to go with the skipper.
I like that choice. I like Billy as well. I do like Billy. I wish he had social media so we could get in contact with him. But, hey, if anyone knows how we can get in contact with Billy Godelman, let us know. I would love to get him on for a chat on the podcast. And, Sam, I say that's our final question. It is a two-parter because I said, who would you like to see on there? You know, maybe alluding to the best suited to go on I'm a Celebrity. In terms of the other part, who do you think would say I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here on day one? Who wouldn't hack the jungle necessarily?
I'd probably have to go towards Mikey again, I reckon.
Oh, no.
I reckon he's that excitable about stuff that he almost scares himself sometimes. And he'll probably end up just saying it out of the blue. Even if he didn't mean it, he'd be that excited about it, he'd probably just say it. But yeah, Mikey.
Oh, I think that's a wonderful place to end the podcast, to be honest, Sam. Again, Mikey Cohen popping up yet again on CCCP teammates. Mikey, I'm telling you, if you want to come on, defend yourself, defend your corner, you're more than welcome, my friend. You really are. But Sam, that's a fantastic way to end what has been a fascinating podcast. I did say at the start, didn't I? Good things come to those who wait. And that adage, that phrase, that very cliche saying has definitely come true on today's episode of the County Cricket Podcast. But before we say our goodbyes, do you just have anything to plug or promote? Social media channels, websites, anything like that?
My mate's clothing line, Fallen Clothing. Go have a look at it on Instagram and Google. It's a nice streetwear brand, so go have a look at it.
No social media channels on your end, Sam? No?
You can go follow me on my Instagram. It's mainly just me playing golf or my missus on there. So Sam Connors _ Instagram, and then my Twitter, Sam Connors something or other on there as well. Don't really know it, to be honest.
Well, Sam, don't worry, because we'll leave the links to those in the podcast description below. So appreciate listeners, that. You can find them. If you want to go and follow Sam on socials, please feel free to find those in the podcast description below. And also, just one final thing before we end today's podcast, we do actually have a Patreon page coming as well, guys. If you want to, you know, donate and help out the channel in any way that you can, it's £1. It's a flat rate. If you're able to do so, we would massively appreciate it here on the podcast. If not, it's absolutely fine. It really is. We're still, you know, creating content no matter what. But I do just think I had to mention that we do have a Patreon page. If you want to go and check that out, the link to that is also down below. But that is pretty much it from us two here at the County Cricket Podcast for today's episode. To all of you wonderful listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.